Turn in your Bibles to Joshua chapter 1, please. Joshua chapter 1. Last week, we had a study to introduce this book, and it wasn't an overview of the book, but more just explaining how we got here. And now we are here. It's time to begin in Joshua chapter 1. Times of transition can be exciting and wonderful and scary all at once, can't they? Much of our Christian life, most of our Christian life, is about serving God in the ordinary things. It's about fighting sin and growing in grace in the routines of day-to-day life. But from time to time, there are transition times when everything changes. Things that shake up our routines, they remove us from what's familiar. Going away to university or coming home from university, getting married, having children, being promoted in our job, moving. All of these things are the kinds of transitions that present us with new blessings, but also new challenges. As we launch into this new series on the book of Joshua, we begin with a great leader and his people, and they are in a time of transition. They are at a turning point in the history of their nation, a new phase of blessing and also of challenge. If you've read the Bible, you may think of Joshua as a book of war stories. And it is that. There are stories of conquest. That element is there and it's very important. But the book begins with one river and two speeches. A river that marks the turning point, the transition time. And two speeches that were given not only for their benefit, but for our benefit as well. Joshua chapter 1, verses 1 and part of verse 2 say, "After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, saying, 'Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people.'" For Joshua and his people, the Jordan River was both a literal boundary and a symbolic boundary. As a literal boundary, it was an obstacle to make your heart sink. It's useful when we read these stories to try to put ourselves in their shoes, or maybe we should say their sandals, and try to remember what it would be like, try to imagine, try to see it in our minds. And if you're going to do that, if you're going to try to picture yourself with the people of Israel camped near the Jordan, you've got to erase paved roads from that picture in your mind. No paved roads. You've got to take steel bridges out of your mind because there weren't any steel bridges. And if you're going to imagine a river in front of you, don't imagine a trickle, which the Jordan is at some points and at some times, but imagine a fast-moving, roaring river that overflows its banks. Chapter 2 tells us that this is Jordan at its flood stage. So this is a serious obstacle. This is not, in that day, like crossing the Don Valley is for us. We need to get across the Don Valley. We've got these gigantic bridges to do it in. They had no bridges like that. And the river at the bottom is not a trickle that you could wade across. It's a roaring torrent. Boats are not an option. And there's no making pontoons. And wading would be suicidal. That's the kind of boundary that we see at the very beginning of this story. The people of Israel are camped at Jordan, and it is a real geographical boundary. It's also a symbolic boundary. It's like a mental line drawn right down the middle of a major transition. It is itself a real thing and a symbol at the same time, like a wedding ring is. There's something different before you put on that ring than after you put on that ring. It's like that immigration stamp at the border. Your status is different after you get the stamp. That's the Jordan River. Not only is it a physical boundary, but it is a symbolic boundary. It symbolizes a crossing from one stage of life to another stage of life. It symbolizes leaving the familiar for a new set of blessings and challenges and fears. The people stand on one side and the promised land sits on the other side. Before they cross, the people are nomads. They're wanderers and pilgrims. But after they cross, they are conquerors and then farmers. Behind them, they leave the body of Moses. And before them stands the new embodiment of God's guidance, Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' right-hand man. Israel is at Jordan when God speaks to Joshua. Let's read that speech next. We've just begun it. Let's go back to verse 2. Here's what God says to Joshua. Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving them, the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you, as I said to Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and to the great sea toward the going down of the sun, shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and of good courage. For to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do all that the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, then you will have good success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid nor dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. There's a reason we had Sarah help us learn that song today. The Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Now there are some themes here that are introduced that show up again and again in the book. Notice very briefly the theme of command. God has a commandment. Go. Cross this river. There's the theme of promise. That land I told your fathers I would give to you, now I'm going to start giving it to you. And there's also a theme of conditions. In order for them to obtain the land, they have to go and actually march in it. He says, I'll give you the land where your feet tread. That's the land I will be giving you. And there's a broader set of conditions. That whole law, God said to Joshua, make sure you do that law that I gave you through Moses. That is a serious set of conditions, 613 laws. So there's command and promise, and there's conditions to enjoy all of the benefits of the promises given at Sinai. They need to keep the law, and specifically, they need to obey the command to go in and conquer. Now, God speaks to Joshua, and then Joshua speaks to the people, and what Joshua says to the people is parallel to what God said to Joshua. There's some repetition here. Notice the same themes, command and promise, verses 10 and 11. Then Joshua commanded the officers of the people, saying, pass through the camp and command the people, saying, prepare provisions for yourselves, for within 3 days you will cross over this Jordan to go in to possess the land which the Lord your God is giving you to possess. There's command and promise, but there are conditions as well. And there are specific conditions we'll come back to later. But he says in verse 12, to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, Joshua spoke, saying, remember the word which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, saying, the Lord your God is giving you rest and is giving you this land. 2.5 tribes already had land on the east side of Jordan. And Joshua says, you're not exempt from these commands. You have to go across with your brethren and fight alongside them. Verse 14, your wives, your little ones, and your livestock shall remain in the land which Moses gave you on this side of the Jordan, but you shall pass before your brethren armed, all your mighty men of valor, and help them until the Lord has given your brethren rest, as he gave you, when they also have taken possession of the land which the Lord your God is giving them. Then you shall return to the land of your possession and enjoy it, which Moses the Lord's servant gave you on this side of the Jordan toward the sunrise. Same themes. And here's the response of the people in verse 16. So they answered Joshua, saying, all that you commanded us we will do, and wherever you send us we will go. Just as we heeded Moses in all things, so we will heed you. Only the Lord your God be with you, as he was with Moses. Whoever rebels against your command and does not heed your words in all that you command him shall be put to death. Only be strong and of good courage. So here's three big themes: command, promise, conditions. Now we're going to file these away for now, but I mention them because we're going to pull them out again and again and again in this book. They keep coming up. But there are three more very important, massively important themes I've left out until now. There are three more themes that if we can fit them together will give us some practical theology to take home. Some Monday morning, put it to good use kind of theology. Three more themes that we need to see here that we want to focus on. The first big idea here is the faithfulness of God. The faithfulness of God. This is what holds the entire story together. This is what holds the other themes together. This is the one thing you must get out of Joshua if you don't learn anything else from this whole book. Get this, that God is faithful. You can trust Him. He keeps His word. He never fails. He does not run away. He does not change. After all, what is it that brought Israel to this point of transition? Isn't it God's faithfulness that brought them to this camp? Why are they here and not in the wilderness? Why are they here and not in Egypt? Because God is faithful. God made promises to Abraham, and He made more promises at Sinai, and it's because He's going to keep them that we find them where we do, camped near Jordan. God made promises, and He's going to keep them. He is faithful. And notice that God's faithfulness is not limited by the passing of human leadership. The first five words of this book are, after the death of Moses. And the first five words that God says to Joshua are, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, starting a book this way could be a real downer. This sounds like a very negative thing. After the death of Moses. And the first thing God says to Joshua is, Moses, my servant, is dead. Like Joshua didn't know that. I know, Lord. We left him up there on that mountain over there. Moses, my servant, is dead. But I think they're recorded and repeated for a reason here. I think they're written for people like me. Because I can imagine myself in the camp that day. I would be the guy outside his tent, tearing his hair out, saying, what are we going to do now? What are we going to do without Moses? He's one of a kind. Moses talked with God face to face. Moses delivered us from Egypt. Moses gave us the law. He's irreplaceable. Now what do we do? Do we go back? Do we just camp here and die? But God is not given to the sort of hand-wringing that I sometimes am. God does not say, Moses, my servant, is dead. Give me a minute to work on plan B, Joshua. I'll get back to you. No. God says, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, let's get you across this river. God's plan marches on, and so do His people. God is faithful, and His faithfulness is not limited by the passing of human leadership. His faithfulness is not limited or hemmed in by a mere river either. The Jordan River was a massive obstacle for the Israelites. But it's nothing to God, who made the whole world in 6 days. His next words to Joshua are, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people. We might paraphrase it this way. The time has come, now let's get on with it. God is faithful. But God's faithfulness does not guarantee an easy road, does it? On the contrary, the second big idea in this chapter is the need for courage. God is faithful. That's wonderful. Get a hold of that. But it doesn't mean the rest is smooth sailing, easy going. The next big theme here, we've got three that we've got to fit together before we've got something to take home. The next big theme here is the need for courage. God commands Joshua, be strong and of a good courage. And then He says again, be strong and very courageous. And then again He says, do not be afraid nor be dismayed. You see a pattern emerging here? Would it be irreverent to say that God is a little bit of a broken record here? Four times He commands the same thing, be courageous. And then the people add their 2 cents worth, right? What do they say to Joshua? We're ready to follow you, but be strong and courageous. Now, why this repetition? Well, first of all, because it's important. But secondly, because he's really going to need a lot of courage. Can you imagine starting into something new and maybe you're thinking you've kind of got it figured out, and then somebody says, "Oh man, don't be afraid. It's going to be okay." And they say this to you five times. Then you start to think, "Oh no, what's over there?" You know? Like the centipede who didn't have any problem walking until somebody said, "How do you manage 100 feet?" You know? I think Joshua did know what was on the other. I know that he knew. But nonetheless, it strikes me that he's told five times. Man, God says something once, you need to pay attention. He says it twice, you know it's important. He says it three times, you know he's speaking to people with thick skulls. He says it four times, and then the people add their two cents worth five times. You got to get this. We need courage. Joshua needed courage. Just because God is faithful doesn't mean this is going to be a cakewalk. It may strike you as ironic, but it is the very faithfulness of God that creates this need for courage. It's precisely because God is keeping His word that they're about to cross a raging river and then besiege cities and then face giants. The path ahead is downright scary. In fact, that's the reason that a whole generation was left behind in the wilderness. Back in Numbers chapters 13 and 14, we have the story of Moses sending 12 spies into the promised land. Right? And 10 spies say, "No way, Jose." That's the Olsen paraphrase. And the people panicked. Only 2 spies said, "So what if the people are strong? The Lord is with us. Let's do this." Those 2 spies were Joshua and Caleb. We'll see more about Caleb later. But I want to point out that Joshua and Caleb are the only 2 old guys in the camp in Joshua 1. Why is that? Because God judged the generation that wouldn't trust Him. The nation did not proceed to the promised land until the unbelieving generation died off, and Numbers puts it so delicately, left their carcasses in the wilderness. So you have a young generation, only 2 really old guys, Joshua and Caleb, and a young generation. Why do I point that out? I'm saying this to say that the people in Joshua chapter 1 are facing things that literally scared their parents to death. God's faithful, but they're going to need courage. And let me say to you, my brothers and sisters, do not be surprised when God's faithfulness leads you to places where you need courage. Even the most blessed transitions in life, let alone the hard ones, but even the blessed transitions bring sometimes overwhelming challenges, don't they? Marriage, children, moving, promotion in your job, going back to school, open doors for ministry you weren't expecting. These are all great things. But they bring problems too, don't they? Great blessings, little blessings, answers to prayer can require as much courage as trials and temptation do. They present you with challenges no one prepared you for. Nobody taught a class on. They give you questions that would cross a rabbi's eyes, if I can borrow a phrase. And that's true for us as an assembly as well. If God blesses us and grows us the way we're asking Him to, we're going to rejoice, but we're also going to scratch our heads and say, "My, what have we gotten into?" Because people is problems, right? But if you don't like people and want to deal with their problems, there's not much point in being in ministry. Even God's blessings create a need for courage as individuals and as an assembly. I think we can identify with this people camped by Jordan. We might not run into any Amorites. We probably won't meet any giants. And raging rivers will be pretty rare. But we'll have our own difficulties, won't we? We'll have all the difficulties, the ordinary difficulties of life. But as believers, we will also have opposition, as we saw in our series in Ephesians 6. Maybe even persecution. And besides all that, we will find to our own grief that our own sinfulness complicates everything. We need courage to go where God is leading us. Well, I don't want to leave you there. We've got to answer the question, then, where do we get this courage? And the answer is in verse 5. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. And again, the answer is in verse 9. Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid nor be dismayed. For, here's the reason why you don't have to be afraid. For the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. The source of courage is not something that Joshua finds in himself. It is instead the unfailing presence of God. Praise God, he is not a here today and gone tomorrow sort of God, right? God is not a fair weather friend. And God is not like an idol. You know, an idol that you have to remember to carry with you because he doesn't have his own subway pass. God's not like that. God's not like Baal, who might be on vacation or sleeping or in the washroom just when you really need him. If you don't know what that's about, there's a fascinating story about Elijah and the prophets of Baal in another part of the scripture. God's not like that. God is always there. That's the rock of assurance for Joshua. That's the source of his strength. That's the reason for his courage. God's faithfulness leads him where he will need courage, and then God's presence supplies that courage. In other words, God supplies the courage he requires. That's what this story is moving us to understand, among other things. That God supplies the courage that God requires. God supplies the courage which he requires. God is faithful to be with us everywhere, all the time, no matter what. We won't always feel his presence, but we may be certain nonetheless that he is with us. And that makes all the difference in the world. In whatever new thing we're facing, in whatever transition, in whatever change in life, to know that he will always be with us. God supplies the courage that he requires. This is the beautiful irony of the story. God creates the need, and then he also meets the need. Here's an analogy that was suggested to me by a brilliant woman who shall remain nameless that we all know and love here. We tell our children every day, get dressed. You can't go to church in your pajamas. You can't go to school in your pajamas. Put some clothes on. So they put on clothes. And then what we do is we feed them. And would you believe they grow like weeds? They grow, and they grow out of those clothes. And they need new clothes. They need bigger clothes. We have created a problem, a need. By feeding them, we create the need for more clothes. So what do we then? We go and buy more clothes. We provide the clothes that we tell them they need to put on. God provides the courage that he tells us we're going to need to have. This is what God does. He intentionally puts us where we desperately need him. And if we're not smart enough to get it, he works it out. He's very capable of putting us in a spot. And when we're finally properly sweating it and begin to cry out, he says, I'm here. He makes himself precious to us this way. God requires courage. He puts us in a spot where we've got to be brave. And then he himself gives that courage by being with us. Why is Joshua 1 in the Bible? Well, because we need it, or else Joshua 2, 3, and 4 wouldn't make any sense, right? True, but there's more. Joshua 1, among other reasons, is written for us so that we'll know that God supplies the courage he requires. Faithfulness does not guarantee an easy road. On the contrary, God's faithfulness will lead us to scary places. But God himself goes with us. There's a reason that that is told to Joshua and that somebody wrote it down for you and me to read. We need to know this. We need to get this. What you need to take home today and pull out tomorrow morning is that God supplies the courage he requires. And believe you me, I need this message probably the worst among us today. God supplies the courage that he requires. There's a question, though, that pops up here. What if we fail him in this? Because we will, right? this is a beautiful story, but our first ominous hint that something could go wrong is in Joshua chapter 1, verses 16 and 17. They answer Joshua saying, "All that you command us, we will do, and wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we heeded Moses in all things, so we will heed you." That's our first little hint that things could go wrong. Can you imagine Joshua? "Oh, you're going to listen to me the same way you listened to Moses, huh? This is going to be rough." And we will see failure as well as blessing in this book. Joshua unfolds a great covenant that God made with his people at Sinai, but it also speaks of a need for a better covenant. What if you and I, like these people, fail to trust God? What if he tells us to be brave and we blow it and we panic? What if we disobey the conditions? We need a better covenant than they had, and we have a better covenant than they had. The prophet Jeremiah said, "There's coming a day when I will write my law in their hearts. I will give a new and a better covenant." In the new covenant, Jesus keeps the conditions. It's not that we don't need to obey because we need to obey. It is that Jesus satisfies the conditions of the covenant. If Israel fails this covenant, they will be cast out of the land. And that will happen. But for all of our failures, we are never cast out of God's love. Because in the new covenant, it's not up to us to keep the conditions. Jesus has done this for us. We look at Joshua and we rejoice in how it reveals God's goodness, but we know his goodness to an even greater extent. So let's know this, that God supplies the courage he requires, and that he even supplies the courage when we have failed to get that, to obey that, to follow that, that he'll pick us up and restore us and send us on the way and go with us. Know this and trust it and seize the day. Go over that Jordan. March ahead. "I don't know everything that's up there." Nope, neither did Joshua know everything. But he had enough hints to be scared. You don't know what tomorrow holds. But if you think about it, you can think of reasons that it could be bad and scary. Lions, tigers, and bears, oh my, and all that sort of thing, right? But God will go with you. Seize the day. God supplies the courage he requires. Thank you.